Well, good afternoon, listeners. This is Laura Moe, and you're listening to the Young Adult Cafe. My guest today is Christina June, and we will start talking to her in just a few seconds. If my music will cooperate. Well, maybe not. And this did this to me recently again. Oh, well. Well, good afternoon, Christina. It's nice talking to you.
Good afternoon. You too. Thank you so much for hosting me.
Stop. Okay. So as we were talking before the intro, you were actually driving home from work, were you? You were
a high school counselor?
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, having been a teacher myself, I know how hard it is to find time to be able to write. And, I wondered as a writer if you do a lot of your writing during the summertime when you're off school or during breaks.
I attempt to. The bulk of my drafting the last several years, I've actually done during National Novel Writing Month, which has been really great. I actually sponsor the club to do NaNoWriMo at school. So so we all sit in the room and write together, and it's lovely.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So,
is this an after-school program?
Yes. Just a club for kids who want to come and participate. So we have a lot of a lot of kids who like to make the attempt. So,
yeah, when I used to teach, I taught an AP class where they had to research and write a lot of essays. And during NaNoWriMo month, I would give them the option. I'd say, you can participate in NaNoWriMo, in which case you don't have to do the weekly essay, or you could, do the weekly essay and then, have to get those grades. Well, all of the kids would decide they wanted the NaNoWriMo because I wouldn't put the only thing I graded was word count. I didn't actually correct their spelling. I didn't edit their syntax or anything. Because for students, it's 5,000 words for the month. Mm-hmm. And I even had some who were competing with me because I would do the 50,000, and we'd put up this chart, and every year I would have one or two students who would compete with me on word count, because we would do the daily word count chart. The kids enjoyed that, but surprisingly, what happened though is that kids, their writing got better, even though they self-corrected, because by the time we did it in November, school had been in session. So how many kids do you have in your NaNoWriMo group? Have kids signed up yet?
For room size, we cap it at 30. And so it's anywhere between, I would say, 5 and 30, depending on the day. When we do it twice a week in November.
Yeah. Well, I think that's great that you do that. Now, you do the 50,000 words, though, right?
Oh, yeah. How I started, actually, in 2012. Mm-hmm. I was feeling a little itchy to be creative and decided I was going to do it. I had always heard about it, but wasn't really brave enough to try. And I did it, and I won, and I kept on writing, and I never really looked back. So I have won every year, and I'm super competitive with myself. So I really like watching the word count go up every day. But I find that it makes me more efficient, especially not having a ton of time to do my writing. So yeah, it's been really helpful.
So did your first novel, it started with Goodbye, did that start as a NaNoWriMo?
No. That one was the fourth novel I ever wrote. And I had just written something that was really dark and angsty, and there was death and drugs, and I needed something fun.
Yeah.
and that novel didn't go anywhere, and no one needs to see it. Precious novel. But I needed something else, and I was walking into school one day. I'm fairly certain it was the morning after the homecoming dance, and there was an abandoned dress shoe laying on the sidewalk, and it just, occurred to me that maybe I should write a Cinderella story. So it started with Goodbye with my modern Cinderella. So it was really fun. And that's the book that got me my agent, first book deal. And it's been really great ever since.
Wow. You know, and it's interesting how just an image, or like you said, an object, just a stray shoe, can all of a sudden you're writing a novel, you know?
Absolutely.
It's just like an astounding, it's like, I don't know how our brains work. but it is kind of funny how, you know, you just like, all of a sudden you latch onto something and boom, mm-hmm. next thing you know, you've got 70,000 words.
And, exactly. Exactly.
But now, everywhere you want to be is, it's not a sequel to your first one, but it's what we call a companion novel. And
yes,
because I've actually written kind of a companion. It's not a direct sequel to Breakfast with Naruto, but mm-hmm. I'd like you to talk about what difficulties you may have had with that, because there are some challenges with writing a companion to a book you've already written. And what
Absolutely.
Are some of the challenges you had?
It started with Goodbye, the first book, has the sort of the classic evil stepmother character. Mm-hmm. And so when I got my edit letter for that one, my editor said, I find Tilly fascinating. And Tilly is the evil stepsister character. And, mm-hmm. It wasn't something that I had ever really thought about, writing a companion for that. You know, it sounded like something that was great. There are some other authors that I admire who write brilliant companions with just sort of the thinnest of threads connecting them all. And mm-hmm. when she said that she really liked Tilly, the wheels started to turn. But to write that evil stepmother character from the lens of her daughter instead of her stepdaughter was a challenge. Because the mother, Belen, is someone who has produced a strong reaction from many readers. And so I think to paint her through the eyes of her daughter, who understands her flaws, but also loves her unconditionally and understands sort of that her mother is always coming from a place of love, was very different and challenging to make her sort of more well-rounded and also to think about the readers who hated her in the first book and make them not, not write her off immediately. She's been one of my favorite characters to write because she is sort of so full of depth.
Yeah, because she's difficult. Because I have to say, I mm-hmm. really didn't like her until the end either. I thought she was. You know, she was putting
Tilly.
She's
pretty awful.
kind of under, you know, well, you term Tilly as being a devious rule follower. Because Tilly
doesn't
want to lie to her mother, but she also has to, you know. I love Abuela because Abuela kind of helps Tilly realize that she has to do what she wants to do. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't want to give spoilers because, people who haven't read the book yet. But, that's interesting because, Belen is probably, I mean, she's not as evil as Sabrina, but she is not
she's not a likable
character. But likable is fine.
Right.
You know, or unlikable is fine because it makes him more compelling.
Right. And there are certainly reasons why she is the way she is. Mm-hmm. But, she for me was sort of a mashup of all the really strict parents that I've met in my career as mm-hmm. a school counselor. And for me, both books, I think, really illustrate different versions of that idea that your parents have baggage. And once you've figured that out, usually I think as a teenager, sometimes it's a really hard pill to swallow and you have to reconcile who your parents are with who you are and your identity as a family versus as an individual. So those are things that I really, I see it a lot in my day job and wanted to have my characters experience the same thing.
Yeah. I had one I've had students who, you know, if they didn't get an A on an essay, they break into tears. You know, I can't go mm-hmm. home with a B. It's like,
yep.
you know, I was teaching
exactly.
a college class at the high school. Like, you're getting college credit for this. A B in college is a good grade, especially being you're a high school kid. You know, they didn't understand.
Right.
You don't have to get straight A's. But, you know, there's
right.
this thing where, you know, if I go home with a B, I'll get grounded. And I just felt so horrible for these kids. But,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, as a teacher, you have to say, well, you know, this is the criteria you have to meet. And I have to base this grade based on the standards that I, you know, they're
exactly.
set. Because I was teaching for a college syllabus, and they had different standards than the high school did. So I had to follow, you know, that curriculum. But, yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, I guess our job as teachers and counselors is to just help them get through, you know, be the Abuelas
yeah.
of the world.
Exactly, exactly.
So,
yeah.
You know,
so.
There was a, I follow you on Twitter, and there was a tweet that you made. It kind of broke my heart. Just read a college
oh,
essay
today.
By a biracial student.
Yeah.
yeah, it was.
Yeah, yeah.
A biracial student of mine who is tired of being told she isn't enough of each piece of her heritage. And she
mm-hmm.
ended it, I just want to be allowed to be me, all of me. And that is really, really heartbreaking. You know, that.
Yes.
It's,
yep.
You know, it's. Yeah, I don't understand why we have to be one or the other. Yeah. And it.
I agree. And I think even kids who, you know, don't come from sort of very diverse backgrounds can feel that when they're being pulled between friends and parents or different paths in their lives. Yeah, I see that every day. But yes, that particular essay just broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting, though. My daughter and I have been reading a series of middle grade books. The main character is Cilla Lee Jenkins, hyphenated, by Susan Tan, who was in the debut group with me, and she is lovely. But that's a question that, as a nine-year-old, Cilla tackles in the two books that are out, and I imagine she'll continue it in the third book that comes out next year. But I think we need more protagonists who are exploring who they are in that way, and
mm-hmm.
coming to the conclusion that they are okay no matter what.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look at, well, like, you know, Princess Meghan, who, you know, just married Prince Harry. I mean, she,
absolutely,
you know, had the same issue. And it's like, you know, her father told her, you know, it's like you kind of have, you have the best of both of us, you know, because when she was in school, she had to choose either black or white. And she,
right.
you know, you're both of those. So.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And I think we just, you know, there's things are better now, but.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly a lot of work to be done. And, you know, we hear a lot about being good advocates and allies. And something that I have learned is that you, especially, you know, as a white writer, I can lift up other voices, writers of color and writers of different backgrounds, and make sure that I am celebrating everything so that readers, other readers will find them as well.
Now, are you by heritage? Are you Hispanic by heritage?
I am not.
Okay, because one of the things I was reading this, I was thinking, you know, I would hope that you're not going to get attacked by the, you know, own voices people, because there's, you know, it happens. And it's like, you know, I think that as a reader, I found that the whole, you know, the relationship with Abuela and Tilly's family connection to be very authentic. And so I would hope that you're not going to get any kind of flack for writing about somebody who does have a Hispanic heritage, because you're not misrepresenting
right.
or just misappropriating.
And that, you know, and that certainly, I never want to do harm with my
mm-hmm.
words. And, you know, I know that it is, you know, to be able to write is a privilege, and I want to make sure that anything that I put out there, you know, is as authentic as possible. And sure, do I know what it feels like to be a young Latinx dancer? No, but I did as much research as I could, and I had sensitivity readers, and you know, they all gave brilliant comments And so now the book is in the hands of the readers, and if they don't like it, that's okay. And, you know, if I have made a mistake, I have learned, you apologize and you learn from it, and you, you know, you do better next time. And that is, that's the best thing I can promise.
Well, that's good. I mean, because I, you know, one of my writing partners, she's debating about changing a name of one of her characters because it she has a Latina name, and she goes, you know, I'm going to get trolled by people, you know, on that. I said, you know, I wouldn't worry about it. I said, because you're not really, I mean, there's nothing that she's doing, that the character is doing, that is specifically connected to Hispanic culture. I mean, she has this Hispanic name, but it's actually a science fiction, it's a science fiction novel. It takes place in 2054, so we don't even know what people are going to be like then. So I don't know. And I told her not to worry about it.
Yeah, no, I'm, you know. I think, you know what, you know, one of the, someone that I really admire, Ellen O, she's, you know, really involved with We Need Diverse Books and is a great advocate for writers of color. And she says a lot, ask yourself if this is the story that you need to tell and if you're the right person to tell it. And if you're unsure, then don't write it. And I think that that's good advice. And if you do decide to move forward, then you need to do the research. Make sure that you are not doing harm with anything that you're putting in the book.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you almost are like a doctor, you know, do no harm. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I was, there was a line in your book. I marked this page because I really liked something that Sage, the dancing instructor. Well, first off, we should probably go back and do like a little bit of a elevator pitch. Just give the listeners a short elevator pitch of the book, and then I'll read the quote.
Sure. So Everywhere You Want to Be is the story of Tillery. She is a young dancer. She's just graduated from high school, and she has, during senior year, she was injured. And so while she never really imagined that she was going to dance professionally, once that option seemed to be taken away, it was the only thing that she wanted. So once she was recovered, she lucked into a summer dance program in New York. And so she goes, but promises her mother that she will go to college when she gets home, but fully intends on taking a job if she's offered one at the end of the summer. So it's her figuring out the right path for herself. It's her figuring out how to navigate her mother's wishes with her own dreams for herself. There's also a second chance romance that I really enjoyed writing. And a lot of it was about Tilly discovering allies and friendships, which was, you know, made the book really special for me. Because I had really great allies and friendships in high school. So,
well, good. Yeah, you know, and that's so important in the high school years. You have to have you have to have allies, because if you don't,
absolutely,
you know, you're going to be a bully target. And but the quote is, it's close to the beginning of the book where Sage, the dance instructor in New York, is talking about she's often used the music of Amy Winehouse and Janis Joplin and some of the pieces she dances to. And then Sabrina, the one who is sort of becomes a quasi-enemy of Tilly and the others, especially Tilly, because Tilly's a really good dancer. You know, Sabrina makes this comment, sorry, but why would someone dance to sad, screechy music by people who look like they hadn't taken a shower in decades?
Right.
And, I, you know, I love Sage's response. Is because sometimes the most beautiful lessons we can learn are from the people who lived with the biggest demons. And I think that's a really great quote.
Thank you.
You know, for any kind of artist or writer, you know, that to explore their demons. And that's part of the reason that Tilly's, her writing stands out, of course, is because she did have that horrible accident that could have ended her dance career. You know, and it ended her, you know, the relationship, but, you know, well, she thought it did at the time, but,
right.
Yeah. So, and now you have another book coming out, in 2019, and it, this is mm-hmm. also a companion to
So this it's called No Place Like Here, and it takes place during the same summer as Everywhere You Want to Be. So while Tilly is dancing, this is taking place elsewhere. So the inciting incident for everything in It Started With Goodbye is that the main character, Tatum, gets arrested for shoplifting, which she didn't do, but she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so her best friend, Ashlyn, who she gets arrested with, is sent to boarding school for the year by her very strict father. So this is a year after that, and Ashlyn is fully intending on asking her parents if she can come home for senior year. And as she's about to ask, she finds out that her father is going to jail and her mother is going to rehab, and she's being sent to stay with her estranged aunt and uncle and work with her cousin at a wilderness retreat center, none of which she wants in her life. She just wants to go home.
Right.
So it's the story of a girl finding her voice and... you know, sort of figuring out how to use it to the best of her ability and to get what she wants without sort of destroying the fragile relationship.
Having been a teacher, I find stories like this so common. You know, a lot of people mm-hmm. who don't work in education, they probably think, oh, this doesn't really happen. Oh, yes, it does.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I'm sure that you get inspired by a lot of your ideas and, your ideas from what actually, you know, the types of stories you run into. And
absolutely. I mean, a lot of kids, I think, this idea that I have to do what my parents tell me until I get out of the house as they're gaining more and more independence is also hard. Mm-hmm. And the idea of balancing what you want versus being respectful of your parents' wishes and not rocking the boat is really hard for a lot of them. This one is for the kids who are still walking that line.
Well, then especially when they find out one of their parents is going to jail,
right. Yikes. Right. And so that's, mom and dad make mistakes too. Mom and dad have their own struggles, and where do I fit in that journey to work through those things? That's something that she, that Ashlyn, is trying to figure out.
Wow. And then these are all by the same publisher, which kind of makes it nice.
Yeah.
The covers are they're very similar. It's like the same designer
mm-hmm.
is doing them.
Yes, his name is Darren Welch, and he is wonderful. I'm very lucky to have those covers. They're beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that one, you're probably right now in copy editing mode with that one since it's coming out in 2019.
We're just about done with copy edits, and I believe the interior is being designed as we speak.
Do you have another one that you have begun, or...
I have some ideas.
Okay.
I have some ideas. We'll leave it
mm-hmm.
there.
Okay. Well, we may have to, you may have to wait till November because school just started, about 2 weeks ago for
two
you?
Weeks, yeah, 2 weeks ago, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
no,
the beginning
I
of
will...
school year is tough. So.
It's hard, yeah.
You probably don't get any writing done.
I write a lot of college letters of recommendation this time of year, so that is about all the writing I'm doing these days.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But that's NaNoWriMo with perfect timing because I am done by then, and then
right.
I can just—that's my reward for finishing. So.
Yeah, many of the teachers I worked with, we would do NaNoWriMo together. A lot of them didn't finish. I would always finish because I'm sort of nuts, but.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them would drop out about 10 days in. And
you have to be committed to it. But, like I said, I'm super competitive. So making sure that I get it in and I want to win, and I want to win early. I want to be done by Thanksgiving so I have a cushion.
Yeah.
my critique partners and I, a couple years ago, we did a really great writing retreat in the Adirondacks the first couple of days of Nano. And the one, I'll put in a plug for her, Catherine Locke, her next book comes out in a couple of weeks, The Spy with the Red Balloon. She wrote the entire 50,000 words in like 3 days.
Wow.
And so
yeah,
the rest
crazy.
Of us were just bowing down at her excellence.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can't quite do that, but you know, those weekends were good for getting, you know, something like 15,000 words, which was a really nice cushion at the beginning of the month. So,
but yeah, November is a hard month because you have the holiday. Well, there's Veterans Day in there. That gives you kind of a writing day because your teachers are off school. But then there's the, you know, the Thanksgiving weekend, which is usually you're spent with family and cooking. And so,
Gotta have, I mean, if you get like an extra 100 words a day, you can do it. I mean, I have it down to a science now. But yeah, it's really, it's one of my favorite months of the year.
Years ago, a group of friends of mine and I, we decided we had to include certain scenes. Like we would say, okay, you have to have a character named such and such, or you have to have a guy who has, you know, has a violent death. So we would get together and compare the scenes where we would say, okay, look, well, how did you write this? You know, we had to include a fart scene. You know?
I think there are, like if you go on the forums, there are people who will post prompts every day. So even if you're not working towards a coherent novel, you can still get in the word count and write to those prompts every day, which is a great exercise in brainstorming and, you know, thinking quickly.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not for me so much, but I have to plan it all out. In advance, not so much an outline, but I have to know where I'm going.
But the one thing that I found that a phenomena that kind of works for me really well, and I imagine this does for you, because you're meeting with your students and you're sitting there writing, is that having other people in the room with you who are also writing, it sort of creates this energy. It's maybe it's competitiveness, I don't know. But I get, you know, I have friends who I meet every once in a while. We meet in coffee shop, and we call it ignoring each other because we meet in coffee shop, sit across the table, and just ignore each other and work for 3 hours. And
I get a lot of work done.
Yeah, and it's like it's sort of this vibration between the two of you where you're not talking at all. In fact, I'll put on noise-canceling headphones so people – you know, if they try to talk to me, I'm working. And phenomena.
I do a lot of work, you know, or not a lot, when I can at like coffee shops, you know, Panera. I should say thank you to Panera in my acknowledgments. but it's nice to have something to tune out and force myself to focus. Whereas if it's just silence and it's me, you know, sitting at my dining room table or whatever, I'm much more likely to just sit there and scroll through Twitter if I'm home by myself. So, I mean, being held accountable for me is really helpful.
I put my computer in airplane mode when I'm working, so I won't.
That's smart.
You know, it's like,
just turn it back off. there's some really great apps, though. There's one called Forest, which I think you can get on like a laptop and on your phone, where you plant a tree. You set it for 30 minutes or whatever, and the tree will grow in the 30 minutes. And if you pick up your phone, the tree will die. So you feel guilty if you kill the tree. That one is helpful. I think you can even earn points to have someone plant trees in places around the world. So, you know, even more reasons to feel guilty if you don't make it. I like sprinting. Sprinting is good. I met my critique partners on Twitter doing sprints with another young adult author, Susan Dennard, years ago, but she had a hashtag going and a bunch of us followed her, and we realized we were the same 5 or 6 people who were following her at the same time, and so we formed a group, and we have been together ever since, which has been awesome.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
You know, it's important. I think that's one thing that's important. If anybody any of the people listening are writers, critique groups really are important, and you need to find people who work kind of at a similar level of writing and can take the same level of criticism, because
mm-hmm.
you don't want to be an experienced writer with two or three books out with a bunch of newbies, because they can't give you the level of criticism you need, and they may not be able to take the level of criticism what you're used to giving out, because, you know,
exactly.
my writing group, we're brutal with each other, but we're doing each other a favor, you know. I mean,
Right. And
you
if
know,
you're
like,
early
I,
on, you don't know that necessarily.
Right. And you're going to run, you know, you're going to go home in tears because people have pointed out you tend to use the same verbs over and over, you know.
Exactly.
We all have writing tics that, you know, your critique partners point that out, or, you know, I mean, it's embarrassing, you know, the work that we have to share with each other, because we're, right now, all of us are working on early draft material, and it's so
mm-hmm.
not polished, and it's like, you know, it's like, you said that exact same thing, you know, just two pages ago, you know?
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, you know, I didn't know, I don't know. So, well, I know you have to pick up your daughter, but so we'll have
I
to,
do.
We'll have to end this soon, but before we sign off, what is your go-to, like, you know, potential writers, they say, well, you know, what's your advice? What is your go-to advice?
So I say two things. One is read. And so
mm-hmm.
I have no formal training as a writer, but I have been a reader my entire life. And I think that it is very valuable to read authors that you admire and study the things that you like about them, and also to read things outside your genre, your age group, to make sure,
mm.
you know, that you have variety and that you're, you know, that you're not just sticking yourself in a box. So, you know, I read a lot of YA, but I love reading adult mysteries. I will occasionally read nonfiction. I write contemporary, but I will read fantasy and sci-fi from time to time. So I think that you need to read widely and study the things that jump out at you, and also the things that you don't like, so you know not to do them.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you're doing that way. And then the other mm-hmm. thing is to finish the thing, whatever it is
right.
you're working on. You know, you mentioned students dropping out of Nano after like 10,000 words or the first 10 days. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I get that. I get the urge, because that was me for many years. You know, I didn't really write toward publication until I was an adult after my daughter was born. And I think about all the time that I could have been writing things when I was in college or grad school. And, you know, and I've got friends who are beautiful writers, but rarely finish a draft. And
mm-hmm.
that is so sad to me, because their stories need to be out in the world in the hands of readers. So I think that, you know, when you force yourself to finish something, butt in the seat, write in the words, even if they're not beautiful, you can fix them. And so, and when you finish it, you prove to yourself that you can do it. And if you do it once, you know you can do it again. So even if it is a complete mess, type the end. It is so empowering to do that. And I mean, you know, I'm, you know, in double digit books now, and I still, you know, get chills every time I get to do that. So I think making sure that you finish the thing, whatever it is you're working on, and whether you put it aside or you shiny it up, you know, just finish it.
Great advice. And,
yeah.
you know, and that's crucial, you know, just finish it. Because it is
mm-hmm.
sad that you have gifted writer friends out there who's like, you know, they just can't finish it. No. That's the thing, that the people who finish are the ones who are going to eventually win the race. You know, it's part of that tenacity,
right.
you know, because first you have to finish it, then you have to go through the whole grueling process of finding an agent or editor, and that's grueling. But,
mm-hmm.
again, you can't
And even if you're not working, even if you're not working toward publication, proving your, you know, we write because we have to, I think, and so
yeah.
to get whatever is speaking to you out is an accomplishment in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, and you're in a prime situation for telling young adult stories, because you are working with kids whose stories are you're they kind of need to be told, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
You'll be these stories will touch somebody's heart, and they'll enjoy
the
reading
goal.
Them.
That's the
well,
goal. I mean, it is my privilege
totally,
to work with them and write for them.
Yeah. Well, Christina, I have totally enjoyed talking to you, and I enjoyed your book. I am going to donate it to a friend
so
of mine who's a librarian, and I think
wonderful.
You know, she's at an IB school, and I think that her kids
great.
Will enjoy that book. So
wonderful.
So, and good luck on your upcoming book, and also with NaNoWriMo this year.
Yeah,
right.
And good luck to you too. And thank you so
okay,
much
you.
For having me. I really enjoyed it.
All righty.
All right, take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. We have just had a pleasant conversation with author Christina June. Her book is Everywhere You Want to Be. It is out now. It is from Blink Publications. My guest next week, she's a repeat. I've had Hannah Riles on the show before, but this time we'll be talking to Hannah. She's in England right now in graduate school, so we'll see if Hannah has developed a British accent since we've last talked to her. And this is a copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. I'm Laura Moe, and you've been listening to the Young Adult Cafe.